couple of minutes after 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you on a Tuesday afternoon. Smith and Jones hits the air. And Jonesy, a ton to dive into today. And again, for a second straight day, a lot to talk about as it relates to the Toronto Raptors. And we'll get to a lot of that later on in the show when Blake Murphy joins us from The Athletic. We just heard from Fred VanVleet in the last 90 minutes or so. He had a press conference, a media availability, of course, via Zoom in the pandemic world we're living in. And he had his, you know, personalized, customized backdrop with the Fred VanVleet FVV logo and the new one that he's displayed a few times over the last few months, the boy, bet on yourself, B-O-Y, as he certainly bet on himself 4 years ago, and $85 million later, here's Fred VanVleet, one of the faces of the future for the Toronto Raptors. And we were talking, Jonesy, yesterday on the air about the Raptors still having a little bit of wiggle room financially, maybe still looking to add a body or two, and certainly probably, we would assume, and you and I chatted with Leo Routens about this, probably looking to add another big to add to the front court depth of Siakam and Baines and Boucher and Hernandez. And we no sooner got off the air and word came out, the Raptors have signed big man Alex Len. And that's an interesting signing for the Raptors, especially considering his experience in the league, his years in the league. The numbers he's put up kind of quietly for folks that don't know a whole lot about Alex Len, but also at a fairly low number and also on a one-year deal, a controllable number, still giving you that flexibility next offseason. And I guess we'll reconnect with Jonesy in a couple of moments' time. We did have him, but we're going to get him back into the mix shortly.
I'm back.
Oh, we have him. There he is.
Yes. Gremlins, headphones and box gremlins. I heard you talking about the front court depth, Eric. And look, I would say this. The Raptors, the perception is they're not starting from as strong a spot as they were before. But when you look at what's been done in free agency, let's look at the other teams. People will say Boston took a step backwards. Brooklyn has all this potential. They've yet to play together. Ditto with Philadelphia. New system, new coach, truncated season, same as Brooklyn. You're going to have it's going to be drinking from a fire hose. There's going to be a lot to take in quickly in a short time. The only team in the East, I mean, what did Miami do? They kind of re-signed people. They didn't really get anybody new. Dragic went back, like this, that kind of stuff. They lost Derek Jones Jr., if you want to look at it that way. The only team in the East that really, I guess off the top of my head, of the top teams that really jumped is Milwaukee.
Yep. And they were already the number one team in the league.
In the last two years. They tried to shore themselves up, for fear of yet another meltdown. And look, with Milwaukee, I'm glad they got some veteran players, because maybe those guys will see some things and go to the coaching staff and they can make some adjustments. Because I would say it has been, yes, a talent deficiency in Milwaukee in the last couple of years, but I think the coaching staff has to look at some of the things that they're doing too and try to make some changes there. So, you know, going back to the Raptors, people will perceive that they're starting from a weaker position, but I don't know if I really necessarily see it that way, Eric.
Well, I thought it was pretty interesting as well, listening to Fred VanVleet, as I said, about 90 minutes ago. One of the comments he had, Jonesy, and it was a longer answer, but I quickly wrote down a portion of his answer, and he said when asked about the moves the last couple of days for the Raptors after his re-signing, and obviously referring to Ibaka and Gasol moving on to the Clippers and Lakers respectively. And he initially started out saying, you know, the standard line of those aren't my decisions, that's above my head, that's up to the front office, I just show up and play with whoever's there, et cetera, et cetera. But then he said, we're back where we were pre-Kawhi, where people are overlooking us again, which isn't a bad place. And I can't wait to get back to work. And I thought that was kind of interesting, Jonesy, because pre-Kawhi, he's bang on. People would, heck, even post-Kawhi, last year, how many people had the Raptors, especially when we talk about our brother from the U.S.,
zero,
right? Many people had them outside of the playoffs, seventh, eighth seed at best, certainly not putting up franchise records and trying to go nip and tuck with the Bucks. Now, granted, yes, the Raptors ultimately did bow out in round two, albeit in game seven, in a game that came right down to the wire, and they were that close to being in the conference finals again, but they were much better during the regular season and much better even into the postseason than many people believed last year. Now, you've lost Ibaka, you've replaced, in a sense, with Baines. You've lost Gasol, you've replaced, perhaps, in a sense, with Len. But I think the replacement, Jonesy, overall comes from, and you hit on this yesterday, there needs to be internal improvement too. And the opportunity, at least, is there for that internal improvement to exist. I think there's going to be more expected from OG Anunoby this year, and they're certainly going to be more expected from Pascal Siakam. He started hot last year, kind of tailed off towards the end of the year, maybe really didn't get it kind of going to the level that the Raptors needed during the bubble. But, you know, he's got that rich contract kicking in this year now. He obviously doesn't have as many people around, and there's going to be more now for Fred, for Pascal, for OG, for guys to say, hey, you now are the ones that have to take us. You said you were ready for it and you wanted it. Now's your time. You got to do it. So I like that internal motivation. Forget about the talent, what it says on paper. What do you got when you hit the floor, and are you playing with that chip on your shoulder again?
That's what it's all about. You know, to quote Serge's phrase, how hungry are you, and how much do you want it? And I think the Raptors, with leadership from Fred and Kyle, two smaller players in stature only, that play like that, and it's the old adage, it's not how big you are, it's how big you play. And that's got to carry some of those guys, and it's got to motivate some of those guys. I think you're going to see a really motivated Pascal Siakam, especially come playoff time, because of what happened with him. Some of those other guys do need to step forward, and some of the new guys that have brought in have things to prove. So I don't think they're starting in any worse a position than they were, as Fred said, pre-Kawhi and even last year. I could not believe that people thought at the start of last year that this team would not make the playoffs with the way they were built. So let's see where it goes. And hey, we're going to know in a week or two, because training camps get started very shortly.
We will go back to basketball in just a couple of moments. In fact, we're going to talk about the Clippers and Lakers with Brad Turner from the LA Times, and we'll focus in specifically on the Raptors, former Raptors, that are now joining the Clips and Lakers respectively in Gasol and Ibaka. And we'll get into some other stuff as it relates to those teams in California as well. And then, as I said, later on in the hour, Blake Murphy from The Athletic will dig a little bit deeper on all those Raptor moves and conversations that Jonesy and I were just having. But did want to quickly mention at least last night's game in the National Football League, and the fact that the Buccaneers looked like it was setting up, Jonesy, to be primed and ready for another Tom Brady-esque comeback, late in the fourth quarter, drive down the field, and he couldn't do it. He couldn't get his team into position, and here we go again with the Bucs, where, and this is why I asked the question yesterday to Jason Cole, who is the cream of the crop? In the AFC, it's pretty easy to look and say Pittsburgh and Kansas City, and Jason said to us he believes Kansas City, for getting the Steelers record, Kansas City is by far the best team in football, period. But when you start now looking at the NFC, Jonesy, big win for the Rams, now sitting atop that division. Seattle was making a lot of noise early in the season, but they sputtered in two of the last 3 weeks. New Orleans suddenly at 8-2 atop the AFC South, even in spite of the Drew Brees injury. And are we actually believing in the Green Bay Packers after a nip-and-tuck win over the Jaguars and sitting at 7-3? And as Jason said yesterday, nobody other than Rodgers that really scares you. It's going to be wild to see how things unfold here in the last 5-6 weeks of the season, especially in the NFC, because I don't know if there's a team truly pushing itself ahead of all the rest.
I agree. I was looking for Tom Terrific last night to lead them down the field like you. I was like, oh, you're going to give Brady that much time? And you're only up by a field goal, he's liable to drop a touchdown on you. But, hey, the Rams showed me something. And, L.A. seems to be the place right now, E.
Yeah, no doubt about it. LA's looking pretty good right now. I mean, if you're a Laker fan, if you're a Clipper fan, if you're a Dodgers fan, if you're a Rams fan, it's all looking pretty good right now, I suppose. We'll have to see what the Kings can do this year when the NHL finally decides to release its schedule and its plans and everything else, but we'll talk hockey another time. Let's flip the attention back to basketball now from football. And speaking of the Clippers, Lakers, to dig a little bit deeper into both teams, joining us from the LA Times, Brad Turner. Brad, thanks for this.
Man, guys, nice transition from the Rams to L.A., Lakers and Clippers, and the Dodgers. You guys are pretty good out there, Jonesy. Come on now.
Hey, it's what we do, BT. It's what we do, man. And we needed to have an L.A. guy on. I'd love to talk to you about the Dodgers. That will have to come at some point when we have a media meal together and I can firmly say that Dave Roberts is due another deal. But the Lakers,
okay.
I'm looking at the Lakers, Brad, and they have stocked the cupboard. And my question is, have they stocked the cupboard where things are going to fall out and break, and things people won't be happy because of maybe having to sacrifice too much? I mean, it's great that they've shored up the depth, but I just wonder how some of the chemistry is going to work.
Well, from what I've been told by coaches in the past, you ready to stockpile and be full of ammunition, then to go to the cupboard and it's bare. And then you can just deal with the little egos here and there. Let me assure you, last season team, having someone like Dwight Howard trying to prove himself, having Rajon Rondo there, having JaVale McGee and AD and LeBron, it wasn't all peaches and cream. And no team ever is that way, obviously, when you win a championship. So I don't foresee anything. Obviously, you have hiccups along the way. You have guys like Montrezl Harrell, who's coming over, who actually was the Sixth Man of the Year award winner. You have Dennis Schroeder. He came in second place for the Sixth Man award winner. Both of those guys average almost 20 a game. Will they average the same amount? I don't think so. But if they do, I think that's a benefit for the Lakers. You know, yeah. And you guys all know Mark. Marc Gasol is a true veteran, a true professional. I got to cover his brother, you know, Pau Gasol, with the Lakers for years. And the one thing I know about both brothers, they are just class individuals. So I don't foresee anything with them. But, yeah, there'll be a few things here and there. But keep in mind, 72 games, the Lakers are just coming off playing a long time in the bubble. Some guys will not play all the games this season, and because of COVID-19, we just don't know with any team if they'll be whole the entire season. I suspect not. How the league deals with that would be interesting. But if you're a team like the Lakers and you say LeBron James is going to sit out two or three games here and there, you can plug someone in. If AD is going to sit out a game or two here, you can plug someone in. That's the beauty of what the Lakers have done.
A lot to digest there and unpack, Brad. I want to get back to the COVID stuff in a second and just get your opinion on how things could work or may look, at least in the NBA this year. But it's really wild to think about. As you said, you've got the sixth man, you've got the man who finished second place, you got a veteran former defensive player of the year in Marc Gasol, and oh yeah, Wes Matthews, who's no slouch either. How much credit does Rob Pelinka get right now for putting this thing together in a fairly short amount of time? You mentioned they just won the title, and all of a sudden the shrewd decisions of, yep, we're moving on from Danny Green, we're moving on from Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, et cetera, the list goes on, and we're actually stockpiling with even more talent, arguably better talent, and we're the reigning champs.
Now, you have to give Rob credit. Obviously, when Rob Pelinka took over the Lakers, he was working with Magic Johnson, and then Magic abruptly left. And Rob became the guy. And there are some GMs out there, there are some agents out there that still have some hate with Rob. But you have success, you win the championship, and then you come back and, as you say, restock the team the way he just did. You have to respect what he's done and how he's going about doing it. It helps when you win a championship. It helps when you have LeBron James and AD. And it also helps. We have a brand like the LA Lakers. Teams, people want to play for them. And guys, guess what else helps? Having to be 75 degrees right now in LA. That helps also.
Well, that the Raptors, that Fred VanVleet made no secret of it. It's nice that, you know, if they're being displaced and deposed from their current home, at least they'll be in warm weather. So we got you on that one, Brad. What about the other team? What about down the hall? I mean, Montrezl Harrell just put his stuff on a cart and told the ball boy, yo, take it down to that other locker room. But they have some stuff to unpack, don't they? New coach, a lot of people looking kind of sideways at Kawhi and Paul George and some of the stuff filtering out about players not happy. How does Ty Lue kind of pack that ship up?
Man, that's a very good question. Now, I've known Ty Lue since he was a rookie playing for the Lakers back in 1999. And I watched him grow from that point to becoming a championship coach like he had in Cleveland. I think he'll do a great job there. I mean, I think what he will do is, number one, he'll practice more than Doc Rivers did. Doc's philosophy was mostly, let's get these guys ready for the postseason, let's save their legs, and let's not wear them out. Well, we saw that didn't help. Obviously, the bubble situation was difficult, but that didn't really help them in the playoffs, and it hasn't helped them over the past few years. Regarding our guy Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, let's just be honest, they were awful in the fourth quarter of Game 7. They combined to score 0 points. You can't have your two stars doing that. So I have to wonder if both of them have something to prove. With Kawhi, we'll never know because he won't say anything about that. With Paul George, he may mention it. No, but the one thing they have done that I really liked, they lost Montrezl Harrell and they picked up one of the Raptors' former players in Serge Ibaka. That was the big thing they did so far. That was very important to them. That helps the Clippers to stay relevant here in L.A. And I still think it makes them a title contender, but they've got a lot of things to get by, and some of those things are just mental blocks. The Clippers, as an organization, has never gotten past the second round of the playoffs, and that will always be over their heads until they do that.
Speaking with Brad Turner from the L.A. Times, hopefully, whichever, whether it's Brad or Jonesy, hopefully everything's good there with the fire alarm going off in the background. Brad, let me ask you this. You mentioned the addition of Ibaka, the loss of Montrezl Harrell. You said championship contender still. Do they have enough? I mean, you got a hell of a 1-2 punch, obviously, in Kawhi and Paul George. But do they have enough, and do they need a better facilitator, a better point guard there running things to kind of bring it all together?
Well, do they have enough? I'm going to say they do not. They do, for sure, as you just said, need a veteran point guard who is a leader and is a vocal leader. Kawhi leads by example when he plays, but sometimes that's not enough. You need someone who will challenge the players, who can call out plays, who can be boisterous, like you guys had with Kyle Lowry last season when they won the championship. So the need for the Clippers really is trying to find that point guard. On the free agency market, they're not going to find it, I don't think. Perhaps they can do it via trade, trying to move Pat Beverly, which has been discussed, trying to perhaps move Lou Williams, which has also been discussed. I don't know who's left out there that they can get, but the Clippers have always found ways over the last few years to make the right move and to get the right players in there. So I think they'll do that. If they don't get that point guard that they really need, for example, they wanted Rajon Rondo. He changed his mind and decided to go to the Atlanta Hawks and got paid exceptionally well for going down there. So that's the one big thing that they're missing is that true leadership point guard. And that's something they have to find.
Brad, is it something they can try to do by committee with the guys that they have there now? Yes, that is my building, Eric, where the fire alarm is being tested. So maybe it's symbolic, Brad, that the fire alarm's going off and we're talking about the Clippers point guard situation. But does Ty Lue have a fix in his offense where they can do it internally?
You know, that means, again, putting the ball in the hands of Kawhi and Paul George. And that means asking both of them to not only run the offense, to set it up for their teammates, but to score, to play defense. That's a big ask. So I think you still, even for Ty Lue, you have to figure out a way to get another point guard in there, or you have to, sometimes you have to improve from within. And maybe that means that Patrick Beverley runs the offense a little bit more, that he becomes more confident in his ability to run the offense and to be able to call out the plays and to improve on his ability to initiate the offense, to get guys in the right position, to improve his dribbling skills, because that becomes one key part of it. So it can come from within, but right now you have to say they need help there. And you don't want to put all the pressure on Kawhi and Paul George, because it's asking a lot for them to do everything.
Speaking with Brad Turner from the LA Times, Brad, I mentioned I wanted to circle back to one of the comments you made about the COVID and how the NBA might handle it. How much do you think the league is kind of leaning on everything that's out there? I mean, forget about just the science itself and the experts that are out there, but watching what they did themselves in the bubble, watching what happened with Major League Baseball, and there were a couple of flare-ups in baseball, but they happened fairly early on, and for the most part, baseball was able to control things. We're seeing things happen in football, but that's one game a week, and there's games, in between games. You can space it out. I mean, it's going to be coming in a hurry with the NBA playing 4 or 5 games a week, 72 games in 6 months. How do you think the league handles this and the teams handle this and navigate their way through what we're all living with?
Well, the first thing would be to test daily. That'd be the first start, and that'd be happening as they start to get to camps when teams won't be allowed to have, I don't think, all 15 or 17 players there. They'll slowly incorporate that. The big key becomes what happens when, and hopefully it doesn't happen, but what happens if someone tests positive? And then you have the contact testing, the contact tracing. And I mean, there's just so many variables involved in this. I mean, I think back to a game where the Miami Dolphins played the LA Rams in LA. And I think Miami came out here with 5 coaches that did not come to the game because they tested positive. So we can't forget about that. And you have a smaller coaching staff in the NBA. What happens if a coach catches it? What happens if a personnel, the ball boy, or the equipment manager, there's so many, the trainer, so many people are involved in this. But if you go to a game and there are no fans there, but you still have security there, you still have people that work for the arenas, you're going to have some of them there, and they're just standing there doing their jobs, and they may be asymptomatic. I mean, all the things you got to deal with and try to understand, it's going to be hard, it's going to be difficult, but I'm sure the NBA is working on that. They're smarter than me. Because I'm not that smart. I just went to state school.
BT, I guess my question for you is, you're out there in L.A., and we talked to Rex Kalamian before he made the move to Sacramento, and a bunch of people, Mark Spears, a bunch of people that have gone back to California after being in the bubble, and all of a sudden you're cruising the grocery store, and you're outside, and you're doing things, and you don't know all these people are negative. You don't know that they've all been tested. Has the health vibe picked up any in the state of California, especially in LA where you are, or are people just kind of carrying on like, oh, well, you know, we'll just kind of live with it?
Man, where are you carrying on? I mean, our governor just decided starting on Wednesday, I believe, that we're going to shut down restaurants for 3 weeks, curfew will be enforced from 10 to 5, and people are really upset about that, especially restaurant owners, and I understand them because you can only have takeout. What they had done was they were dining outside, and they were putting heaters up for us because it gets cold when it's 50 degrees.
No, bro. You don't know cold. You do not know cold. Do not go there with me.
I know. I like throwing that one out there. So, but people here in California are just tired, like everyone else is around the world, about with COVID. But in California, man, people are just still out. I mean, I go to the grocery store. I fancy myself as a beginning chef. Okay, stop it. A beginning cook. So I have my mask on. I do my grocery shopping. I walk through the aisle, and I see the same people that I have known from that same store all the time. And I come home, and I try to cook my food. I don't go out as much as I used to before the pandemic hit. But, yeah, I see people out. And I'll be curious to see what happens now that we have this curfew about to take place starting tomorrow, to see if people still decide they're going to dine out.
Yeah, City of Toronto's currently in a lockdown for the most part as well, Brad, with a lot of stores shut down, small businesses and restaurants, same thing, doing takeout only. And maybe that saves folks, though, from sitting on the patio, because it's currently 34 degrees right now in Toronto, but it is supposed to be 50. It's supposed to be 50 starting tomorrow and, like, the rest of the week. So we'll take that, and you can have your 60 degrees frigid temperatures. We'll take our 50. That's a heat wave for us. Listen, we appreciate the time today. Thanks for the insight, Brad.
Hey, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Good to talk, BT. Take care, man.
There is.
Okay, likewise.
Brad Turner from the LA Times. And, you know, nice insight there on both the Clippers and the Lakers. And we're going to dig a little bit deeper, Jonesy, on the Toronto Raptors in just a couple of moments here when Blake Murphy joins us after the break. But wanted to mention that we're cleaning out our prize closet with the help of Jiffy. And we've made mystery boxes that contain signed jerseys and more that you can win. Tune in during Good Show, Writer's Block, and Tim and Sid to collect keywords, then text them to 590-590 with your first name, last name, and city to enter. Qualifiers will be chosen during leadoff and immediately win a $100 gift card to spend at Jiffy. Fast and reliable home maintenance for less. Tune in weekday mornings and call if you hear your name announced to qualify. Your next keyword will be announced after 4 p.m. during Writer's Block. And to find out more details, you can go to sportsnet.ca/590. Also wanted to mention quickly, I also said Tim and Sid there as part of this Jiffy Mystery Box thing. Tim and Sid later today. Fred Van Vliet will be on the show. So make sure you keep it tuned to the Fan throughout the day and check out that interview with Fred Van Vliet again in a few hours' time. But when we come back, Blake Murphy from The Athletic on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Here until the top of the hour, Writer's Block coming up at 2 p.m. And again, later on today, Fred Van Vliet on Tim and Sid. He was speaking, Fred was, roughly now about 2 hours ago, chatted with the media on a Zoom call, a Zoom conference call, announcing his new deal, 4 years, $85 million with the Toronto Raptors. But the Raptors have been very busy with others as well, including Aaron Baines and Alex Len. And to talk about the last 3-4 days and how the roster is shaping up as we approach training camp less than a week away, and the start of the season under a month away, from The Athletic, Blake Murphy. Blake, thanks for the time today.
Yeah, no problem. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, Blake. Good, Blake. Listen, yeah. Let's kind of just look big picture maybe, Blake, before we break it down to each guy. Raptors a week ago to this day versus the Raptors today. What's your assessment, your take on how they look and the way that Masai and Bobby Webster had to kind of shift and adjust and sort of juke after the moves involving Ibaka and Marc Gasol?
Yeah, it's it looks a little different. I was kind of approaching the offseason figuring that they would, and this report was out there that they did do this with Serge Ibaka, a heavier one-year deal for one of their centers to be back, and then with that other spot, I thought maybe they'd take a flyer on a young guy like a Harry Giles, a Noah Vonleh, something like that. It certainly sounds like Serge and Mark preferred to go the ring route and the LA route, and in Serge's case, get a little bit more money than he could have got on a 1 year, which you can't fault those guys for. But I do think I think the Raptors pivoted pretty well, and I think taking care of one of your guys and Chris Boucher is a nice signal to send. I think the combination of Aaron Baines and Alex Len, it's not Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka, but that's not a bad center rotation, especially when you factor in, Boucher and the ability to play some minutes small. So I think, I think they've done a good job maintaining a certain floor in the front court. I don't know if the ceiling with those guys shoots as high as playoff Marc Gasol with the, Celtics series aside, what his IQ brings at both ends of floor, and they certainly don't have, that big to soak up possessions like Serge did on offense. But, there's a floor there with guys like Baines and Len. And I think, we all know that this was probably going to be a bit of a transition year. So just kind of stabilizing that makes sense as a plan B to me.
Blake, and it's funny, before you came on, I was saying the same thing. A lot of people, friends, fans, people saying, well, they've lost so much. And when you look at the East overall, and Eric and I were kind of, you know, hypothesizing about this, I don't think other than Milwaukee making the moves that they made, that a whole lot of people have really jumped up and improved a ton in the East. Other than Milwaukee, I mean, Miami kind of re-signed Dragic. Udonis Haslam will be back for year $9 million. You know, the Nets have this great potential, as do the Sixers with a new coach, and the Nets with new players, but they haven't been on the court. Takes a while to learn a new system. I don't think the Raptors are starting from a place that's any worse than any of the other teams. I mean, people might look at other teams with more potential, but I don't think the Raptors are starting from a bad place.
No, I don't think so. And I think the East is going to shape up fairly similarly to last year. Most of the East last year, we talked about it being a top six and then kind of ugly outside of that. I think you can add Brooklyn and make it a top seven. Indiana, maybe if they're healthier, they're a bit more forward. Like, I think they were a clear six last year. Maybe they're a bit more formidable. I'm with you. I thought Milwaukee obviously made the additions they made. And then I've been pretty impressed, not to fall for this for a third or fourth straight year with Philadelphia, but I feel like they had a pretty strong offseason, kind of cashing in the Horford chip and building a roster of supporting pieces that better fit Embiid and Ben Simmons. Now, we'll see how all that works with the new coaching staff and everything, but the injection of kind of shooting and youth around those guys could make Philly a threat. But I thought Boston hasn't had the best offseason through the draft and free agency here. And like you said, Miami's basically running it back, which is good, but they lean a little older in some key positions. So I think the Raptors will be in the mix there, and I think the East probably shapes up as a top seven, and you could probably split that into two tiers, and the Raptors might be in that second tier, but anywhere, three to six in the East, I don't think would be all that surprising.
It's interesting you mentioned that, Blake, and again, we're speaking with Blake Murphy from The Athletic. When you talk about the top six, top seven, whatever, outside of, and again, we're making a big assumption here, who knows, injuries, obviously that's always the intangible, and we never really know how something's going to play out, but if we just, all the three of us, assume that maybe Milwaukee's the top team, as they have been for the last 2 years, if there's not a ton of separation between, two, three, and then six, seven, to me it's kind of like all bets are off once the playoffs come. Other than the fact that maybe one team's got a home court if it goes seven games, a 3-6 could very easily be a 4-5 matchup where there's very little separation. And is this, Blake, the year that the Raptors are having this year that many thought they would have last year, and we've just sort of kind of delayed that sort of transition year by a year, and perhaps maybe people just kind of weren't prepared for this to the same extent that maybe they should have been last year?
Yeah, I think it's funny how our expectations change when a team overperforms our expectations, where, as far back as when the Raptors acquired Kawhi, I've been writing things like, hey, if they, even if all goes well, if Kawhi leaves, until 2021, there's not going to be a clear path to, like, adding to this core. It's going to be a bit of a transition. And then I wrote that again after Kawhi left. And then the Raptors last year, they were just so good that I think everyone's expectations to where they'd been before. And, maybe collectively we lost sight a little bit of, there's a legacy cost to going all in for a championship. And it's that you need to regroup for a minute, and you need to find the pieces around your next core for your next contention window. And I think the Raptors are still in the process of that. And last year, some of that was Kyle Lowry just refusing to age like we'd expect the 35-year-old point guard to age. And maybe he does that again. But, yeah, I think, to your point about how even the East is going to be, you could go back and look at the bubble playoffs and look at how Milwaukee, Miami, Toronto, and Boston shape up. And depending on how those four matchups or how those four teams matched up series to series, any one of those four teams may have gotten through to the finals if they got the right matchup, where I think, Boston was the worst matchup for Toronto. Miami was the worst matchup for Milwaukee, but Milwaukee may have beaten Boston and Toronto may have beaten Miami. And you get this kind of rock, paper, scissors thing going on. I think the East could shape up like that again. And it's why, you know, I know there are some people who have that mentality of like, if you're not competing for a championship, you should blow it all up. But first of all, that's not really realistic a lot of the time. But also, you know, we've seen how tight the East is, and we've seen how you get the right playoff matchup and you get the right bounces. And, you know, a guy like Pascal, a guy like Fred, a guy like OG, they take little steps and suddenly, you know, you're in that 3-4-5 mix again and could make a run to the second or third round of the playoffs. Like, it's not the gap between first round team and third round team in the East right now is just not that wide.
Blake, totally agree with you. I mean, Eric knows this line. I've used it for years, and people have heard me say it. You know, you buy the house, you pay the mortgage. Like, when you get a championship, like, you can't just expect to win one every year after that. There are going to be changes. Guys will leave. You'll have to retool. And the trick is to kind of like what the Raptors are doing it now, try to kind of patch it on the fly and then get a break. Who knows what trades might come in February or March? And you know, what moves might be made or what injuries might happen and stuff like that. So I totally agree with you. And look, I think the one thing that's being underplayed here, and I know in the case of Philadelphia that, you know, they've got a new coach, and, you know, Milwaukee, they've got new players to integrate, key players to integrate. Toronto still has a lot of its core guys that are, you know, championship guys that carry the load. Kyle, Fred, Pascal, you know, OG, Norm. These guys are still here. And they do have a guy who was coach of the year last year. And I think some people are forgetting about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially early in the season with how quick this turnaround is, how short training camp's going to look. You know, I think these teams that do have continuity and familiarity are going to see a boost. You know, I would imagine, you know, the shine comes off of that by the time playoffs roll around, because teams have had 70 games together to get familiar. But I do think, yeah, there's something to that, especially early in the year. It wouldn't really surprise me if the Raptors come out to a really hot start, because, you know, they're four of their starting five and their top bench guy all know the system and know how to play with each other and hit the ground running. You know, I'm sure that's the task for Nick Nurse and his staff this next couple of weeks is, okay, how do you get Baines and Len and Bembry and those, and Malachi Flynn up to speed quick enough that you can rely on them? Because you don't want to do what you did last year with how compressed the schedule is going to be this year. If you guys remember back, Nick Nurse was running a 7-man rotation at the start of the last season because he didn't trust any of the new guys. That's something he might have to loosen up on a little bit as guys get up to speed. But, yeah, big picture, I think that continuity with a lot of, you know, Boucher, we can include Boucher in there too with, you know, yes, the minutes that he played last year. I think that continuity could be pretty helpful. And, you know, whether that's a factor only for the first month of the season or whether that helps you, you know, maybe that's the difference between home court and not home court in the first round in the East, or whatever home court looks like by May.
Speaking with Blake Murphy from The Athletic. Blake, I'm going to make a couple of assumptions here. I may be wrong. We'll find out, I guess, in a week or so, a couple of weeks, as training camp unfolds. I'm going to assume that right now it's at least penciled in that Aaron Baines is your starting center alongside Pascal Siakam in the front court, and I'm thus assuming that you've got Len Boucher coming off the bench. But putting aside the two new faces in Len and Baines, where does Chris Boucher fit into this mix with the new contract, with the new role, and with obviously more expectation heaped upon him? I you know, I'm not necessarily interested in whether it's 15 minutes versus 22 minutes or whatever it is, but how does his role evolve within this team, you think, this year?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's time for him to go from, hey, we're calling on you to give us a spark when things are bad, to, hey, we're relying on you every night. And that's a tough adjustment, and it wasn't something Boucher did seamlessly last year. There were times where he fell out of the rotation because, you know, it just wasn't there night to night. And then he'd sit for three games and then he'd come out of nowhere for a huge game, you know, against Phoenix or something like that. And, you know, it's great to have guys with the mentality that they can shake off a couple DNPs and contribute like that. But the challenge for Boucher is now they're going to need him every night, whether he ends up playing backup center minutes or he's technically the backup power forward or he sees some times with the starters in funkier lineups, whatever it is, you know, the nights are hopefully, you know, the Raptors are hoping the nights where you can't call on Chris Boucher or he only gives you 4 or 5 mediocre minutes are gone. And he's about to turn 28 early in the season. And I know that his basketball experience is still not super rich, but he's at that age now and he's being paid now where the Raptors are going to expect this every night. So that's the big challenge for him is, you know, you can be the jump between being a 10 and 12 minute energy guy and being a guy that your coach is relying on for stability every night. That's a big jump, and it's a big mental jump as much as anything. I've been high on Boucher as a player for, you know, going back to his G League time now. And I think this is, you know, obviously skill wise, you want to see that three drop a little bit more. You maybe want him to add some strength, but I do really think, you know, for him, a lot of it is the mental night to night challenge. And can you be a guy who is there every night for Nick Nurse? And, you know, it's not a, that kind of carousel of like, is it Boucher tonight? Is it Rondae Hollis-Jefferson tonight? Is it O'Shea Brissett tonight? You know, Nick Nurse is going to want that to be Chris Boucher every night now.
Blake, you mentioned G League. And again, you know, when you're talking about kind of reloading or retooling for a championship, how much should we be, be aware of and be cognizant of the developmental factor? Because you look at, you know, a couple of the guys that are carrying the ball right now, a few of them like Norm, Fred, Pascal, all came from G League development. And I look at the guys that have been drafted. We haven't seen a lot of DeJuan Hernandez. I'd really like to see this kid play because I think he's got something. And then when you look at what they did from the salary structure, next year is a pretty big free agent year. Like people are talking mm-hmm. about Giannis like he's the only guy. But, you know, like theoretically, you could have Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, DeMar DeRozan, you could have, I mean, some of them have been here as an address already, but you could have a lot of free agents out there that you could choose from that aren't named Giannis.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, from the developmental side, obviously it's going to be a challenge. We don't know what the G League is going to look like. There are almost no details out there about that. Like, I would assume if there's a G League, the 905 are kind of Tampa-based with the Raptors, but I don't think that that's something that you can – you know, pencil in to be as big a factor as it's been for you in recent years. And the reality is you look at these salaries and you mentioned DeJuan, and this applies to even a Matt Thomas or Jalen Harris, their second round pick. I think a lot of these guys, and this is going to be great for internal competition, but maybe isn't the best thing, you know, for everyone kind of looking over their shoulder. But some of these guys are going to be playing for their spot on the team the next year. And whether, you know, whether the Raptors get a Giannis or, you know, end up going for two or three of the kind of second tier guys with that space they've maintained, you know, all these guys aren't going to be back. So if you're Paul Watson, if O'Shea ends up on the roster, DeJuan, even Matt Thomas, all of these guys are playing not only for minutes now, but to factor in to the future of this team where, you know, we've seen it play out with Kawhi and we've seen other teams not do this as well. If you're going to take the big swings at free agents like that, and you're going to pay your guys like Pascal and Fred and later OG, the money they're worth, you've got to find these cheaper gems at the end of the roster and you've got to keep developing them. So, you know, there's a lot of leverage on those developmental guys. Beyond just this year and their own careers, it's, you know, are you a piece for us in 2021 or are you a casualty of us trying to keep that flexibility open?
Hey, Blake, we're up against the clock. I just wanted to ask a real quick one here. What do you think in terms of whether the Raptors are done or do you think that there's more to come in the next week and a half, whatever, as camp opens, et cetera? Or is this the roster?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the roster short of maybe one of the non-guaranteed guys getting cut and they fill that spot. But they're going to want to add a couple camp guys that could be G-leaguers too, and that second two-way spot's still open. So, you know, I have Jalen Harris, their second-round pick, earmarked for that. But maybe they bring O'Shea back into camp and maybe they sign one or two undrafted free agents to compete for that spot. A couple interesting Canadian two-ways out there too who are free in Mariel Shayok and Kyle Alexander from the Heat. So possible there's a little competition at the end of the roster, but I think the big stuff's done.
Hey, Blake, thanks for the time today, man. We appreciate this.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks,
there
Blake.
There is Blake Murphy from The Athletic. And, Jonesy, one of the conversations we'll have to have in future days and future shows as well, and we don't have time to get into it now, but, you know, we haven't heard a whole lot as it relates to Terrence Davis and the legal issues that have been swirling around him the last 6 weeks or so. And that's a story certainly going into camp as it relates to a guy that played a fairly significant role last year and somebody that you thought could maybe be a budding piece for your future. And then what becomes of him? And then does that have a trickle-down effect to whether it be Matt Matt Thomas, even Stanley Johnson looking to sort of reclaim his career after a sort of a lost season last year. And then even another guy that was banged up a ton last year in Patrick McCaw as a depth guard who's now going to be banging out for minutes with a Malachi Flynn that's going to want to be nipping at the heels of Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry. So lots to chat about as it relates to the Raptors and the amount of people that are there speaking to what Blake just said about the competition. We've got to take the break, Jonesy. We'll come back with more Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones. Jonesy, how about this to close out the show? This is something that actually came out yesterday. We didn't get into it, but as we talk about the NBA and all the free agency and the sweepstakes of next summer and everything else, Brian Windhorst from ESPN, just sort of speculating, a theory here. What if Anthony Davis, who has yet to re-sign with the Lakers, is waiting to see how maybe Giannis approaches his Supermax extension? And then Davis could potentially sign for a 1+1 deal, which would thus give the Lakers financial flexibility to make them a player next summer and maybe bring Giannis to the Lakers.
Anything is possible. I have seen it all. I mean, LeBron's trying to, like I said to Leo yesterday, get everybody. So, like, it was the old UCLA tactic back in the day. They had the 15 best players in the country on their team. So, could only play five at a time, but if that guy was on my bench, he wasn't beating me.
Thanks to Brad Turner and Blake Murphy. Writer's Block is next. Thanks for tuning in to Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.